Ignition sequence start.
See, Elijah Wan has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yes!
Paul touches it.
The doctor
goes to Hart. On Thompson steps right, shoots for the win. A three. He got it.
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary.
Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. Today, we've got a very, very special episode of Locked On Rockets for you guys. The first in the history of Locked On Rockets, we are doing a Rockets Town Hall discussion. And today, I'm joined by three of Rockets Twitter's most famous people. We've got Roosh Williams, Stanford KP, and at Do Nots, Forrest Walker. How's it going, guys?
Hey, what's up?
What's going on?
Hey.
All right. So basically, this kind of town hall style discussion, I basically wanted to get some of the greatest Rockets minds together and just kind of tackle some of the big topics from this season so far. So the main one, the one that we've been discussing all the way since back in July, is Russell Westbrook. Now, we've had some ups and we've had some downs with Russell Westbrook, and I think that's kind of his kind of where he's been at as a Houston Rocket. Is he's had a lot of ups and a lot of downs. So kind of, where are we at? Do we think that this team is officially better than it would have been had Chris Paul been a Houston Rocket? Do we think they would have been better off if the trade had not happened? What are y'all's thoughts on this? Let's lead with Roosh. You go first.
Yeah, so to directly answer whether they're better off with Chris Paul, I mean, at this point, well, first, I think it's difficult to answer, but overall, I think the answer is no. Because because of his durability. You know, I mean, the main thing for all their the things that I think he can do better than Westbrook, he's too old to have the usage rate that we would require for him to be effective the way that he was 2 years ago. And I think that's what leads to him breaking down. I think part of the reason that he's been able to remain healthy in Oklahoma City has to do with the fact that, you know, he defers a lot. You know, he doesn't take as many shots. He's not as involved in the offense, so at least the way he was in terms of scoring and isolating and being responsible play after play, you know, for trying to beat his man. So from that standpoint alone, you know, I'm happy with the trade. But obviously there are some trade-offs, you know, just overall IQ. I miss Chris Paul's IQ. A lot of times we see Russ, you know, do something that I would categorize as low IQ basketball. You know, but then for every time he does that, he makes up for it. But he's just got those stretches, you know, where he'll pull up from mid-range, or he'll be, you know, the other night I think he was 7 of 8. I forget the game. It was like
he falls in love with the mid-range shot too frequently.
And he starts shooting it, and then he'll miss dunks, and it's just like sometimes it seems like it piles on. But no, overall, I'm happy with the trade so far.
Okay, KP, where do you stand with Russell Westbrook as a Houston Rocket?
Pretty happy. I think the main reason is that we have seen the ceiling, and the ceiling's pretty good. I think when Russ is disciplined, when he is healthy and load managed, he's able to balance Harden in terms of the skill set he brings on the floor, transition, rebounds. I know he's gambled some on defense, and there's been some confusing plays, but the starting lineup's pretty good in my book in terms of being able to lock in defensively, and then I just think he has an extra gear, and we've seen him turn it up at a couple different times. The comeback versus San Antonio comes to mind, and so I think they're still building, but I'm pretty happy just because I think he's probably the best like partner for James in terms of being at the same level, and I think, I don't know, that their on court and off court fit seems really good, so I'm pretty happy.
Definitely. You know, I think that relationship between James and Russ is something that we need to talk a bit more about. You know, they obviously, it predates their time in the NBA. They've been friends since they were 10 years old. That's, you know, not insignificant. Forrest, I know I had you on here recently, and I think we did spend a little bit of time talking about Westbrook, but your thoughts on him so far?
I kind of wish that we could swap the Russell Westbrook and the Chris Paul eras in the Houston Rockets, because they're both very good. Russell Westbrook is extremely talented, and he'll also make you pay for that talent regularly, which is not my favorite thing, but you take the good with the bad. That's just kind of how it works. But I feel like he actually does bring up your ceiling because he is just so chaotic, and because he might just hit a bunch of unguardable shots in a row in a way that Chris Paul never really did. Chris Paul's a steadying influence, and I kind of wish that this team had the steadying influence so they would be consistently very good right now, because right now I feel like that's good enough. But when the Warriors were active, I think that it actually might have been better to have like a more spiky offense, so you might gamble and just for no reason beat the Warriors on a given night. But that being said, Russ has turned out better than I thought he would, but not as well as I'd hoped he would so far, which I think is perfectly reasonable.
Okay, now kind of moving past Russ, but just to the team as a whole, it feels like the last couple years, these teams have had kind of a defining characteristic. And, you know, to me, that 17-18 team, their defining characteristic was kind of it really felt like they could win any game, no matter how bad the score looked, no matter how down they got. And, you know, the game that immediately jumps to mind for me is early in the, maybe not early in the 17-18 season, but after Chris Paul had returned from his injury that sidelined him for the better part of the first chunk of the season, there was a game early there against the Portland Trailblazers where they fought back down from like a double digit deficit and got back into this game. And it was one of those where in the past, you know, in the 16-17 season, you know, Ryan Anderson is still in the starting lineup, and it just, that game, to me, they fought back, they got back into it, and just throughout that season, we saw them mount these comebacks, and it never really felt like you could count that team out of a game. And then last season, to me, it felt like the defining characteristic was James Harden's greatness. Just the unguardable tour, him dragging the Rockets back from the 11-14 start to the season. What do you guys think has been the defining characteristic of this team so far this season? And I'm going to open the floor, just whoever wants to chime in first.
Yeah, man, I mean, I think, I think the defining characteristic of the team so far this season has just been inconsistency. Like, you know, they can they can beat anyone and they can lose to anyone. And I mean, I think that's the one thing that I've been able to count on, is that, you know, you can't take any game for granted. They could beat anyone and have a, you know, and look great and have a great stretch like they are right now, you know, beating Denver, Philadelphia. And then they can also lose to Detroit, you know, or they can blow a 22-point lead or whatever. You know, there's probably like five or six of those types of games to point to. So that is the reason I have been, I mean, I'm optimistic, but I'm very cautiously optimistic, and it's because you just don't know what to expect. Whereas, you know, with the 17-18 team, it got to a point where every night you knew they were going to win, you know, unless one of Capella, Chris Paul, or James Harden was hurt, and even then they still won a lot of games. But when those guys were on the court, you knew they were going to win, period. You know, so that feeling has not hit with this team, and that's kind of been the main source for my pessimism, is, you know, one game they look awesome, next game they look terrible. And those types of teams generally just don't win, you know? I mean, they win enough, they do well, they get to the second round, but they don't achieve, you know, a championship. So
this feels like a very rockety Rockets team. Like, the things that have been happening for the past few years where the Rockets always just, you think they're one thing and suddenly they're something else, those were largely missing in 17-18, but it's just, it feels like this is the true essence of the team, like you said, that whatever you think you know about this Rockets team, just wait 4 days and they're going to do something completely different. They'll go on national TV and just lay an egg on Christmas against the truly dreadful Warriors and then come back around and like beat whoever. It doesn't feel like any team is safe from them or that they're safe from any team. And that's such a weird feeling, but I don't know how better to put with this, like, I can't count them out of winning a championship, and also I can't count them out of just like slipping into the low playoff seeds.
Exactly.
And for me, and it's a slight cop out, is that I just don't think we know. And maybe that's the problem, is that we don't know. I don't know. Midway through the season almost, but I think this team is still finding its identity. Now, you hope that they find it in the next 6 weeks or so, and are able to actually put it all together after the All-Star break. But I don't know. Like, they've just gotten Eric Gordon back. They're just maybe for the time being are trusting Isaiah Hartenstein. They may make a trade. And I am wanting to wait. I'm wanting to wait because I think we'll start to see them steady out. I think their last week or so is hopefully more indicative of the prior 3 weeks of craziness. But that being said, I do think there is a force about them that when they scramble, when they like kick it up a notch, that they impose their will. And so at least I see that. But you're right. I mean, it's been some really head-scratching losses. But I just don't think that's who they are. Like, I don't feel that reflects who the team will be 4 months from now. But so the short answer is I don't know, but who knows, right? So
I would, just to clarify like where I stand, I wouldn't count them out of winning a championship for the reasons that both Forrest and KP mentioned. Like, you know, when they get explosive and when they do the things correctly that we know they can do, they can beat anybody. And, you know, as far as coming out of the West goes, so far I think they actually match up pretty well with the Clippers. And we don't know how they're going to match up with the Lakers, but, you know, there is some optimism in the fact that the Lakers have lost all 7 of their games. They're 9-7 against teams above 500. So, you know, they're not like a Golden State juggernaut. And to add on to what KP was saying, I mean, Eric Gordon coming back is pretty big. And if Hartenstein is an actual consistent piece of the rotation, then that could possibly change things, and it starts giving you the ability to buy some of the wins that some of like the, you know, the regular season wins, schedule losses, to actually win those games, you know, instead of losing like at Detroit or against Detroit, and those types of losses. So, you know, it gives you a chance to get a higher seed, and anything can happen in the playoffs. I'm not counting that out. I just feel like given the low efficiency of one of our stars in Westbrook, I feel like it's going to be hard to overcome that in a 7-game vacuum. So
it's super weird to be talking about a team that's tied for the second seed in the West right now. Like, we don't know if they have a shot to do anything, but that's who they are at the moment. I mean, to me, it's exemplified by a play from the Sixers game in which toward the end of the game, the Rockets put the clamps on the Sixers, and they were looking really good. They put together a really convincing run. And then Russ just, like, badly misses an open putback dunk, leading to a dunk in transition from the Sixers. So, like, it feels like within the span of 5 seconds, you can see, like, championship Rockets and, like, Keystone Cops Rockets just at the same time. It's truly weird, and I don't know either. And I don't. But my whole thing is I don't know if we're ever going to know or if we could ever know.
Well, I think we knew with that 17-18 team, and I think that's something we can all agree on, is there was such a driving force behind that team. You know, and if they didn't go up against the juggernaut that was the Golden State Warriors, I think we all know what would have happened with that team. They would have been, you know, any other year, you remove the Warriors, that team would have been the heavy championship favorites, just without a doubt, compared to all the other competition in the league. So we've kind of seen what it feels like when you are heavy favorites, only they just had the juggernaut of Golden State right next door. And so that kind of sucked. But we've got plenty more thoughts to share, and we will continue on that. I have a comment for you, Roosh, about that Detroit game here in just a second. But we have to take this break, so you guys don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And we're back in here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Here with the Rockets Town Hall crew, Roosh Williams, Forrest, and KP. And basically, we're just kind of talking Rockets basketball, just kind of having a little sit down, powwow, covering all aspects of Houston Rockets. And in segment one, Roosh brought up the Detroit Pistons loss. And I wanted to kind of mention the fact that, you know, Westbrook sat out for 2 of these losses, and that Pistons loss specifically, you know, and Forrest and I have actually spoken about this before, that Pistons loss, it really felt like had Westbrook played in that game, we wouldn't have lost, to me. And I kind of look at the 24-11 record with a grain of salt, because really, we've had some close games. You think Kings game, you think the Spurs game, which ended in such bizarro fashion with, you know, the dunk, and then I'm not saying the dunk cost them the game, but it led to probably a lack of focus down the line, which did cost them the game. But really, this team could be, you know, what, 28-7, give or take? And again, two of those losses coming without Russell Westbrook. So I do kind of lean on the side of, we don't really know what this team looks like. We just got Eric Gordon back. So I guess kind of what I'm getting at is, how much more do we expect out of this team now that they are fully healthy? Do we think they have a legitimate shot at maybe even cracking the one seed? I mean, we spoke about the Lakers and kind of their lackluster record against actual opponents, and they did have kind of a softer record to start the season, an easier schedule to start the season. So do we think the Rockets have a legitimate shot to, you know, break into the one seed at, you know, at some point further down the season?
Yeah, I mean, I do. And I do think you're right, you know, that a lot of their losses so far you could explain away. Like, I don't disagree with that. I mean, they lost on a buzzer beater to Bielitsa, right? They, you know, the Pistons game, you mentioned, you know, kind of a schedule loss. I think it was the second night of a back-to-back. It was. Westbrook was out. The guys we had off the bench were Austin Rivers and Chris Clemens and Gary Clark. So severely lacking size. Guys were tired. And I remember specifically in that game, they were getting beat up and down in transition. And that was, you know, to me, it was kind of why they can never complete their comeback and win the game. Pelicans game, you know, our big three all sat, they lost. So, you know, Spurs game, they blow the lead. Clippers game, they blow, like, you could explain all these away, and I totally agree with that. But at the same time, when that happens generally with a team, you know, there's a reason for it, right? Like, the Bielitsa buzzer beater was because of a miscommunication and basically a defensive mistake, and it left the shooter wide open and he nailed it, you know? Like, it was a tough shot, but it was still their fault. Like, every loss that you can point to, the Spurs game, it was still their fault. Clippers game, meltdown, still their fault, you know? Now, do I think that they could crack the one seed and become a championship team? Yeah, I think they have enough talent to put it all together. But what my fear is that they need everything to go right. You know, they need all of their pieces to be available. Like, basically, when things go wrong, I, at the end of the day, at this point, I don't have as much faith as I used to in D'Antoni making the adjustments on the fly when he needs to. You know, he's good when he can come up with a plan. He's good when he has, like, his weapons and he can use them how he wants to. But when he starts losing a couple, you know, if he loses an Eric Gordon, or, you know, if we lose whoever it may be, a Daniel House, it's hard for us to overcome that. And it shouldn't be if we want the one seed. Because, like we keep talking about, we've seen what it feels like when you have a real championship team in 2017-18. And that team came in and night out, and it didn't matter who was on the court, they competed. You know, there were no lackluster efforts. And I'm going off memory. I'm sure there were a couple, right? But generally speaking, it's like every night they came to bring it, and every night they pretty much won. You know, and we haven't seen that. And it might be harsh, but that's just kind of where I stand, because I've spent so much time rationalizing and explaining and building up hope. And then you realize at the end of the day that the flaws were the flaws for a reason. And you kind of blind yourself to that because you're shaping statistics to narratives to try to make things match, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. Really great teams feel inevitable for a reason. And this Rockets team, what feels inevitable is not their victory, and not that they're going to always be in it like they were in 17-18, where they just, you could not put them down. This team, it feels inevitable that they're going to have to be fighting in a game late. So that happens for a reason, you're right.
What's going through my head is, I think they can, and statistically and given the schedule and everything, they certainly can get the one seed. However, I'm not sure that they will. They're going to be cautious with Russ. I think this is probably the earliest I've seen Harden, like, actually banged up. I know he had the injury for 3 weeks in 2017-18 that we survived somehow. I think somehow, though, they end up probably two or three. And I think they, more so than other years, they probably have a plan for March and April that doesn't mean going full throttle, because we've seen the effect of going full throttle, and that means James hurts his wrist, and all of a sudden he can't shoot threes anymore, right? Or, you know, he's just gassed. And I think we need a James Harden to be like he is this past week, where he can get off, you know, he can get up off the bench after resting for three, four, five solid minutes and close a team out. And so, you know, Daryl Morey's mentioned it, that they have a plan. I think they'll keep in striking distance, and if it happens, it happens. But I just don't want them to chase, and I don't think they'll chase. And so I have them at probably two or three, but can they get the one seed? Yeah. I mean, the Lakers could fall back off, and the Nuggets I just don't think are consistent enough. So we'll see. But I just don't think they'll gun for it like they did in 17-18.
I have a question for you. So I do agree with you about what you're saying and what they can achieve, but what is your definition of them not going full throttle? Because, you know, to some degree, I agree with you that, you know, maybe on the court, when they're actually on the court, they're not going full throttle, maybe defensively, because, you know, like we've talked about a lot, the defense has been poor. But, I mean, Harden is playing 37 and a half minutes a night. Russ is playing 35 minutes a night. And PJ's playing 36 minutes a night, you know? So, like, we are – I think they're overexerting, you know, who knows what the game plan is. I have no idea. But I think, at least in that respect, they're definitely overexerting the stars, you know, and we've already seen what happens when we do this. But regardless, like, D'Antoni keeps doing it. And that's another reason that, you know, I kind of feel like they might flame out unless we address the depth.
Totally agree. And let's say they do address the depth with another trade or a pickup, great. Let's not count on it, obviously, because it's the odds are so low. I do think, though, that Eric Gordon helps from a minute standpoint. So I don't feel like they're going to be at the same minutes distribution as they are. Russ at 35 minutes a game, but, you know, probably sitting once every six games is pretty good for me. I just want to get James and PJ's minutes down, and I think they will. And they talked about that a lot in the offseason, so my hope is that they don't lose it. And so you're right. They have not eased off the throttle as it stands on January 5th. But I do think probably come the All-Star break, they're going to hopefully find that balance between, hey, we need to gain our rhythm, but also, you know, save this roster and manage it well for April and May. So we'll see. I mean, I think it's a great, like, barometer if we're sitting here in 2 months being like, why are all of our starters playing 40 minutes a game? And but hopefully that's not the case.
That kind of leads me into my next point that I did want to hit on is I'm sure every single one of us at some point or another, and many of you listeners, have fired up the trade machine and, you know, explored different opportunities, different hypothetical trade scenarios. The big name that's been kind of circling for a while now, the main guy on most Rockets fans' wish list would be Robert Covington, probably. Now, so past Rocco, have you guys kind of looked at any of the other teams and tried to see, okay, well, you know, this guy makes sense, or this guy could be a guy that we could get our hands on? Any little, you know, what I want to call it, little GM moves you guys got going on that you want to talk about?
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, go for it. I know what you're going to say, and I agree with one of them for sure.
I was going to start with two shooters. One of them is Bielitsa from the Kings, who actually surprisingly is not terrible on defense, but offensively is a really nice complement, I think. And he's 6'10", and he shoots lights out from three. The other one is Davis Bertans. Both salaries, I think, salary is a huge constraint here, but both salaries fit into both this year and potentially next year plans. So I was just going to start with that, but Roosh, was that who you were thinking? Or?
No, actually. I mean, do you think Bertans is available realistically? Because I don't.
No, but
at least not for what we'd be able to offer. For.
I think it depends on what the Wizards want to do moving forward. If the Wizards decide that they actually want to angle for getting John Wall back healthy, and then also getting, you know, pairing him up with, you know, Bradley Beal the way that he's been playing, if they want to go forward with this current core, then yeah, it makes sense. That's what they would want to do. They would want to hold on to Bertans. But if that's not the plan moving forward, then maybe they'd be okay taking some draft compensation for him.
I mean, I'd be surprised. I would love, if we could get Bertans, I would love that. I had wanted him, you know, since he's been in San Antonio, because obviously the Rockets play the Spurs, you know, a lot. And a stroke like that, like on the Rockets, would be awesome, because they could really use that given the way they play, clearly. But I was thinking, first of all, I just wanted to point out, I haven't really watched the Timberwolves at all. But Rocco's shooting 33.8% from three, so that's something to keep in mind. Obviously, he'd be great defensively, so I'm sure he'd probably shoot better with, you know, wide open looks in the system that we run. But, you know, I don't know how salaries match, and I don't know, like, buyout candidates and how that stuff works the way that KP would know, so I'm not even going to go there. But just two guys that I think might become available and could be realistic to be had are Marvin Williams and Markieff Morris. I've wanted both of those guys for a while on the Rockets, specifically Markieff Morris, to play like a stretch four. But yeah, I would like those two guys. I think they would add some size, a little length, and definitely like very good three-point shooting, and they could play the four and still stretch the floor.
So far, no unrealistic names, which I'm appreciating. I think that's one of the main issues that we have when we start getting near the, you know, the February trade deadline and people start throwing out these wild hypotheticals. Look, I love Clutch Fans as much as the next guy, but going into the random Rockets trade idea thread on Clutch Fans bothers the ever-living hell out of me sometimes, because you go in there and it's like, you know, let's trade Nene for Kevin Love. And I'm just like, ah. Come on, guys. Like, really? Like, just, you know, take 5 minutes to, like, learn a little bit about the CBA before you start suggesting stuff like that. Now, Forrest, some, you know, minor technical difficulties there for just a split second, but you're back with us. Do you have any trade targets in mind?
The point about Markieff Morris is really good because he can fit into a trade exception, which is pretty cool. The Rockets have a couple of about $3 million-ish trade exceptions. They can get some lower paid guys to tuck right into if that's how it's going to go, which makes it a lot easier because they don't have any salary to go out. They really don't. I still think that a guy like a Wilson Chandler would be pretty good. He's getting a little longer in the tooth, but that's kind of what you have to look at if you want to try to tuck someone into a trade exception. And you got to find a team like the Nets who might be willing to give up on an older vet right now in a year that's just really just not going their way, and maybe get like a second round draft pick or something. So that's kind of where I'm at. You know, as we talk about Robert Covington, he's as always, I think, a nice pipe dream, but I think realistically it'll be someone in like the Markieff Morris or a Wilson Chandler range.
I want to ask, and I'm just going off the hip here, like I haven't put any thought into this, but Al Horford seems to be unhappy in Philadelphia, and given his salary, I'm sure it would require something involving Capella and I don't know who else. Gordon? I have no idea. You can't trade Gordon, but I don't know. But is there any scenario in which either of you would want to flip some package centered around Capella to try to get Horford, if that was even possible?
Hmm. Yeah, let's do it. That's where I'm at this season.
Yeah, actually, funny enough, I actually thought about it while they were... Because that article came out right before they played the Sixers, and I was just watching Horford just, you know, wander around on the court while he was out there and get cooked by James Harden. But then I also saw him get cooked by James Harden, and I just, I don't know. He's like $25 million on the books. Definitely goes into luxury tax territory, and it's also, I don't know if it is a positive trade asset. So then I quickly shut down the idea. So I don't know. I did think about it for a split second, and then decided hell no. But a couple other names though. Christian Wood, who we had in our camp and let go, I think, who's killing it right now for Detroit, also trade exception fits in. Dario Saric, fallen out of the rotation in Phoenix, also fits into our trade exception. So that's
not bad.
Who knows, right? I mean, things could change in 4 weeks. I do think it's, I mean, we'll start to get a sense if they start moving Nene quickly that something's bigger. And I alluded to this, but if they can move him earlier, like whenever he becomes trade eligible in 10 days, then they're maybe trying to multiply his salary along with others. But if nothing really happens, I would not count on any kind of move happening then. But yeah, those are just a couple of names top of my head too.
Yeah, as far as that Al Horford situation goes, I'd have to go hard no on that, just because Clint Capella is one of the only viable trade assets you have left that actually makes sense as far as his youth, what he could give to, you know, an aspiring team who's maybe not ready to be playoff bound quite just yet. You know, one of the teams that jumps to mind is maybe Atlanta. Should, let's say, you know, God forbid everything falls apart, the Rockets don't, you know, make any push with James Harden or Russell Westbrook, they're not going to be in championship contention. The duo just flames out in the playoffs. Literally worst case scenario, having Capella as a young center to potentially wheel and deal yourself back into a rebuild mode would be nice to have. Plus, I think he just complements this team very well.
Yeah, I mean, I personally love Capella, and you know, I don't think the Sixers would trade a five for another five. You know what I mean? I don't even think they would want Capella. So I was just having fun.
Oh, of course. Well, hey, that's what we got to do here, right? And we will keep doing that. We've got more stuff to talk about here in just a second. So you guys, don't turn us off. Don't go anywhere. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, having our Rockets Twitter Town Hall meetup. And kind of wanted to save this for the final segment, because this has been a topic that's been hotly debated in the Twitter sphere. Mike D'Antoni as the Rockets coach.
I knew we were going here. I knew it.
Oh, obviously, I had to save it for the final segment. So I don't even want to put any. I don't even want to put any, like, you know, bars around this or put any parameters. Just whatever thoughts you got, just let them fly. Let's go.
Okay, I think it's appropriate for me to start this one since I am so critical of Mike D'Antoni. Look, for anyone who's listening to this that does follow me, obviously I only get 280 characters to, you know, say things at a time. So. I can't really flesh it all out, but my thoughts on Mike D'Antoni, I mean, look, obviously I've been a Rockets fan since, you know, early 90s, and there's been a long stretch of Rockets basketball, frankly, until Mike D'Antoni came along. You know, they got to the second round in 2009, and then they got to the Western Conference Finals in 2015 with McHale. But I mean, ever since Mike D'Antoni's come to the Rockets, they've either been in the Western Conference Finals or the second round. I mean, getting to the second round has become an expectation for this team. So, like, it's not lost on me what he's done and, you know, what he's done with James Harden, how he's unleashed him. And it's also not lost on me that, you know, all the criticisms, a lot of the criticisms that are thrown at him really don't apply because, you know, Chris Paul blew his hammy out, and that's kind of that. If he didn't, then Mike D'Antoni would probably have a championship and, you know, all of his ways would be permanently vindicated, right? But the fact of the matter is that I kind of just think he's peaked with what he can do. Now, I don't think he's necessarily peaked with this team because, obviously, you know, Gordon just came back and he wasn't right to start the season, so we're hopefully getting a healthy Eric Gordon. You know, we're adding a guy like Hartenstein to the rotation, so, like, things are changing, so he's still working with the offense. And, you know, Russ is still getting integrated with the team. I don't think he's still his full self within the context of the Rockets, you know, offense at least. So I understand all of those things. I just think at the end of the day, his mind is focused on offense only. We're still not defending. They're 17th in their defensive rating for the season. And even if you go in increments like last 5 games, last 10 games, last 15 games, they're really no higher than, like, I think 14th or 12th or something. You know, like, even at their best, they're still not very good as far as that specific statistic goes. And it kind of matches what you watch, you know? I mean, their defense isn't really that good. There's times where they lock in, there's times where they lock down, but we still only play one guy, Clint Capella, routinely that's taller than 6'6", and that's a problem, you know? I just think that's like a general rule of thumb problem. Like, a team of 6'6 guys doesn't really win championships unless you have, you know, Steph and Clay. So maybe Russ and James can be the exception to the rule, but, you know, the lack of size and length really hurts, and I think that going hand in hand with D'Antoni's lack of defensive principles and the team's general kind of poor habits on defense, like, it's really hard to overcome all those things, and you usually need everything to go right, or you need a coach pulling the right strings to overcome, you know, for those shortcomings. But his solution is really always to just go smaller, you know, add another shooter, get a smaller guy in there, spread the floor out more, let James do his thing, you know, the quotes, they'll figure it out. So it's, you know, it's that kind of thing, and we've seen it, we've seen it when the playoffs come, he becomes very predictable and he kind of just shrinks, you know? He has a couple moves here and there, like a substitution or something like that, but it's all like a motion flex type offense, like, sorry, not flex, it's just like motion option, you know, we're just reading the defense and then trusting James to make the play. He's never running something specific, like, hey, the other team is on an 8-0 run, we need a very specific play, let me get a couple screens and make sure that Ben McLemore is going to get a wide open shot from the corner, you know, something like that. Or make sure that, you know, we're going to run a pick and roll to get something headed to the rim. You know, we don't see that. We just see, like, him trusting Harden, and that's great. But at the end of the day, I think the best coaches have something ready to go You know, they don't just trust the player to figure it out.
The coach is the coach for a reason.
Right. You know, I mean, and I don't think he's that. So I don't think he's incapable of doing it. I just kind of know what his what tricks are in his bag, and I've just kind of lost faith in them. Like, to put it this way, it's going to take Harden. You know, I don't know what our record is at this point because he's done it so many times, but we basically win when Harden scores 40 or more. And when he doesn't, I think we're at 500 or very close to it.
Should be 13-1 now, I believe. I think it's 13-1 when he scores 40 plus.
Cool. So what, 11-10 when he doesn't? So in one of those games, I guess, is the Pelicans loss. So 11-9 when he doesn't. You know, so that kind of tells a story. Like, we need Harden to score 40 to win or to at least guarantee the victory. Like, that's our recipe. And that's just kind of hard to depend on, especially in the playoffs, especially when, you know, refs swallow the whistle and things change. Like, you know, I mean, am I crazy for thinking that? Anybody?
No, I don't think so. I mean, this is probably where you and I, like, I think have a lot of agreement. I think he's not hands-on. And that's where my worry comes in, is that, you know, the best coaches, I think, know when to be hands-on and, like, impose their fingerprints on a game. And, like, you'll watch Pop, like, call three timeouts in a row. Or you'll watch any other coach just say, you know, Carlisle's great at this. And, like, actually, to your point, like, forcing the team to run a play every now and then to, like, especially against a certain look or to get a basket. And you know, there's a lot we don't know in terms of what actually goes on in the court. But at least from what we can see, he's a lot more passive. He's kind of just waiting for things to unfold. He's deferring to James, which, if you're going to defer to anyone, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. But that being said, I mean, I don't know of a better fit right now for this team, just the way they're constructed and the way James is, than to let him go and to let him figure it out. And the best motivation for this team, especially for James, comes to be like when he motivates himself. And So it leaves me wondering, well, is there a coach that could actually, like, push James in a different way and, like, actually get him to do things he doesn't want to do? Maybe. But I also think that they have, like, a bond, and it works, and it's been really successful. So it's kind of like you're in a weird bind. He obviously doesn't play young players until he's forced to or magically sees that they are skilled 3 months into the season. But, like, so yeah, the flaws and are clear. I just don't know if it's a death blow, right? So that's where I'm still trying to figure it out. But I agree that there's some clear limitations. But who knows? You know, there's still some time, and I think they're gonna have to adjust this year more than they have in years past.
I'm glad I get to go last year, because my whole stance is that honestly, I agree with everything that's been said, but I just think there's nothing you can do with it until the off season. There's no one out there. You know, there's no coach that's definitely better than Mike D'Antoni, and not really any coach that's possibly better than Mike D'Antoni. So firing him mid-season would just make the team worse. We can revisit this in the off season depending on what happens, but while I agree that there are problems with his coaching style, I don't think he's bad enough that, like, I don't think it's even a debate that he's bad enough that they would be better off letting him go. So it's just kind of a non, like, I don't know. There's no prescription for what to do, as far as I can see, I guess, is my point.
I mean, look, let me make it clear. I'm not advocating firing him mid-season. I think that would be a disaster. I don't think it would turn out better than not firing him. I mean, look, we'll see what happens in the playoffs, you know? I just think that if we kind of see more of the same, then, I mean, what can you expect, you know?
No, I think we're all in agreement. There is no firing him mid-season, not for a team that does have championship aspirations. We're just trying to kind of jot down our thoughts as to, you know, what the limit is with Mike D'Antoni. You know, I kind of had this thought, if, let's say, you know, best case scenario happens, Rockets win the chip this year. If you look back at the past decade of coaches who have won a championship, I don't think I'd be that wrong for saying that the only coach on that list that I could say Mike D'Antoni is better than would be Tyronn Lue. You've got Steve Kerr, you've got Eric Spoelstra, you've got Greg Popovich,
yeah.
Rick Carlisle, and then who Nick Nurse.
Phil Jackson.
And then Phil Jackson. And I think that's it, right? I don't think I'm missing anybody in there.
So, yes, well, I mean, but
mostly a bunch of really good coaches.
It is, but that's what I'm saying is that's the competition that he's up against.
But like, keep in mind, I mean, I think that guys like Nick Nurse especially, like, who was Nick Nurse? Did any of y'all know Nick Nurse? I didn't. Did y'all know Nick Nurse?
Not at all.
I didn't, right? But he, just because he wasn't a household name doesn't make him not a good coach, right? It wasn't his offensive system was implemented well before he took over the head coaching job in Toronto, I believe. If I'm not mistaken, I think that was his offensive system was in place under Dwayne Casey before he became the head coach. I think that's how that worked out.
I'm just saying, when we talk about the discussion about who's better or who's, you know, definitely better or possibly better, I'm just trying to underscore that I don't think we have any idea, you know? Like, I didn't know who the hell Nick Nurse was, and it turns out he was the right guy to go lead a team to the, you know, even if the Warriors were hurt and you want to discredit their championship, he at least led them to the finals, you know? So I'm just trying to underscore, like, it's not always bad to find out what else is out there and to move on, because frankly, I just think James Harden is so good and so talented, and I think the way that we play at this point is pretty much based on what he's doing 1 vs. 5 first, that he can kind of man it himself, I think, as we've seen, and I think that we're all in agreement on that, that I would just rather have a guy who focuses on defense, you know? Someone that can guarantee that whatever defensive scheme we run, whatever defensive mindset we have, is going to virtually guarantee a top 10, top 12 type effort, you know? And then everything else, I think, is shored up because Harden is that good. That's my opinion.
It's going to be weird not to see Mike D'Antoni lose to Steve Kerr or Greg Popovich this postseason. Or I guess if that does happen, something extremely bad has gone wrong.
Probably. I mean, he could lose to Carlisle, in theory, I think, as we've just debated and discussed. I think he could lose to Carlisle.
Ooh, that would hurt.
Yeah, it would. I think he could lose to I mean, you could call it losing to Frank Vogel, but realistically, losing—I think he could lose to LeBron. I think anyone could lose to LeBron.
Doc Rivers has won a championship.
You know.
So. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, he could lose to Doc Rivers.
The question for me is, I agree. I mean, we let this season happen. I mean, Mike he'll have his shot. The question though for me is like, what actually do the Rockets need out of a coach? Right. I mean the front office, as far as I can tell, is extremely hands-on in terms of data and shots and shot quality and positioning and sets and play types and all that stuff, right? I mean, it's not like this is a new 100% install and whoever comes and whoever's coaching the team gets to do everything their way. And so it's kind of an interesting thing because they probably more than any other team are very, like, set in how they want to use James Harden. And so then it becomes, what do you want? Who do you actually want to manage the roster? Who do you actually want to make those game time adjustments? Who do you actually want to develop the young players even when you don't want to? I don't know. It's a very unique situation, I think, more so than other teams, at least in my opinion. But that could just be because we only have Rocket lenses on. But I keep thinking that. Like, what actually do they want? Do they want a Harden whisperer? Because is Mike D'Antoni not that? Do they want someone who can do something different? So anyway, it'll be an interesting offseason if it doesn't work out, like how they actually approach that. But at least for right now, I totally agree with what y'all have been saying.
I think that's a really good point. And I don't know what the answer to that question is. You know, what do they want? I don't know. And that's why I mentioned defense, you know, because I just picture, like you said, right, everything we do is kind of set, you know. Like, I don't think a new guy could come take this team over and make them look that much different. It's pretty much Harden breaking down defenses and then shooters around him. I mean, every now and then we do some things. We do some handoffs. We do some pick and roll with Capella. But it's not anything, I don't think, complex enough that, like, they can't kind of keep it going to some degree on their own. But I just think a team with centered around Harden, being Harden, that has, like, a, I don't want to say bruising because that's too cliche, but, like, a defensive identity. You know, like every night when they show up, they have a defensive identity, you know, because he can hit step backs over everybody. He can break down anybody off the dribble. He can throw up a lob to anyone that's 6'10 with long arms. You know, he can do all these things. But we just always see, and at least this season, I see the team break down defensively more so than anything. Like, I have a lot of gripes about the offense, but at the end of the day, it's the fact that they break down this frequently defensively that you know, that kind of makes me just like, oh my God, I've seen this movie so many times and I'm tired of it. And that's kind of where my criticisms of D'Antoni come from.
Well, we might get a chance next season to see just how much Mike D'Antoni is or is not doing for the offense.
Yeah, I think that I think it's very clear that if a decision's made in that department, specifically in the head coaching department, that we'll have to wait until this summer to figure that out. But I think that gives us a good spot to kind of wrap things up for today. Bit of a longer pod than usual, so we'll wrap probably at about 45 minutes, which is not bad for the first of what will hopefully be many Rockets Twitter town hall podcasts in the future. Now, give each of you guys know the drill. You get to plug, you know, your Twitter handle and anything else that you guys do as far as Rockets content. So we'll just go down the line. We'll go Roosh, then KP, then Forrest. So,
yeah, if you just want to see someone complain and occasionally be optimistic, follow R-O-O-S-H Williams, Roosh Williams on Twitter, and pretty much just tweet about Houston sports. So, yeah, thanks for having me.
And if you want to see an over-reliance on numbers and a bias towards like inventing narratives, then that's probably me, Stanford KP. I'm also
conspiracy takes.
Yeah, pretty much anything and everything you want on the Rockets and the Texans, and I just defer on Astros. But that's me. Thanks again for having me on.
If you want to be either brought back to earth or lifted off the ground regarding the Rockets, come and follow me on at Donuts, D-O-N-O-T-S, because it seems like whatever I'm feeling, everyone else isn't.
All right, thanks, guys. I appreciate y'all taking the time to join me today, and hopefully we'll do this again in the not-so-distant future.
Cool, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's where we will wrap things up for today. As always, thank you so much for tuning in, and thank you for our three guests, the guinea pigs of the Rockets Twitter Town Hall podcast. Now, if you want more content before our next show, go ahead and go follow all three of them. They're great Rockets content, as well as other Houston sports on Twitter. I'm also on there at JT Gatlin, and our show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, the website lockedonrockets.com, and of course, our email address lockedonrockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you guys to reach out to me and let me know if there's anything else that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you're listening to this podcast and other podcasts, if you could please subscribe to us and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes that show up straight to your inbox, like this one, before it's published to the previously mentioned social media outlets, and then we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. So for this Sunday, January 5th, 2020 episode, this is where we break things off. As always, thank you so much for listening, and we hope to have you back again very, very soon, right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.